This is episode number 10 of Find Your Immersion. The practice never ends with Matan Cohen Citron. More than just a studio teacher, Matan believes you don't do yoga. Rather, you absorb the practice, and that extends in everything you do. We're going to talk about living the American dream and then failing at the American dream, raising daughters, and so much more. Welcome to Find Your Immersion, your home on the Audible web for all things yoga. I'm your host, Patrick Clausen. Matan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you for having me.
We are so glad to have you. Matan, are you ready to flow?
Absolutely. Let's start.
Let's get it done. So I've given our listeners the 30,000-foot overview of you, your practice, but we want to know a little bit more. Take us down to the ground level and tell us about you. Specifically, who are you?
All right. I think that I'm a student of life. Like I always like studying different things, exploring. Kind of, I never get things for granted. I always have to challenge them. So I love study. I love I'm a collection of many different experiences. I did different things, and I'm still young, but I did different things. I grew up in Israel, so I had like this Mediterranean background, Israeli background. I served in the army. I traveled for many years. So I've been in South America, Central America, Southeast Asia, New Zealand. So I really love seeing different cultures and interact with different cultures and people. I love people, and I really appreciate how the way they see their life. So I'm an explorer in my soul, in my nature. Right now, I live in Fairfield, Connecticut. I have two amazing young girls and amazing wife, and I teach full time. I teach yoga, meditation, yoga therapy, and I'm pretty content with my life right now. That's where I am.
Loving family, practicing yoga every day, world traveler. I don't think it gets much better than that.
Yeah, it's scary to think that it can get better.
So, Matan, you mentioned something that I find interesting. You were in the army is that Israel?
Yeah.
Now, it's mandatory conscription over there. Is that right?
It is mandatory. Okay. Yeah.
Now, I think that's interesting. You went from being a soldier to being a yoga practitioner. That's kind of a big swing.
You know, I'm sure you know the story of the Bhagavad Gita. So, Krishna is a warrior. And it's recognizing, you know, that there is a, you know, the yoga is a, we have to recognize that there is a battle inside of ourselves, and the question is, you know, who is winning the battle here? You know, there are these Zen stories like the good bird or the bad bird. So I always say to people when they ask me, like, you know, you went to school here, you want to succeed, you went to college. You never question yourself if I'm, you know, I want to go to a Harvard or Yale or whatever university you want to go, and you want to succeed. So it's the same story in Israel. You grow up, you want to be good. This is the way you do it. You go and you serve in the army, and you go and you serve in, you know, you try to go to a good elite unit and do your best. So I think motivation is in our nature, and kind of this is how I saw it before. Like, later, I remember when my young brothers joined the army, I offered them the opportunity to, you know, take these 3 years and go and travel somewhere, do something for yourself, but no one listened to it. So, yeah, I'm proud of it. Like, I have no regrets for doing what I did.
So let's keep going here. So we know you've gone all across the world. You've gone to even India, is that right?
Yeah.
How did you go from India to Connecticut, of all places?
I never planned. Like, after being in India, I said, like, the last thing I want to go is to the United States. But I met my wife in when I was in India, and she lived here in the U.S. So we tried to work it in Israel. It didn't work, and then I said I'm going to give it a chance and come here. So I went to school in Israel. I just transferred to a college in New York, and I gave it a chance. And luckily, you know, everything worked out. We live here. We're happy. We have two girls. It worked out very well for both of us. And leap of faith.
Total leap of faith. I would have guessed from India you would have gone to, like, Berkeley or San Francisco or Brazil. Who knows?
Yeah.
So we want to get this show going with a success quote. We want to start the day off with inspiration every day. Matan, share with us a quote that you live your life by.
Okay. So I'm doing the best I can do at every moment. That's what I try to do the best I can. And I try to let go of what is not serving me at that specific moment. So that's basically it. It sounds simple, but, you know, it took me many years to find it and to accept it, that's kind of the work that I have to personally do.
Now, you mentioned that it took you many years. One of the common denominators in our listeners is they haven't figured out their formula to succeed yet in life. You know, maybe they've got a bunch of kids and they don't live that dream life of teaching yoga every day. So how can the everyday listener implement that in their lives?
Did you mention they got a lot of kids?
They've got kids. Their life isn't perfect.
What is perfect life? That's a question. Like, you know, it's like we have this idea that, you know, we will sit on a beach in Mexico and do meditation. I wake up early in the morning. Like, I wake up usually 5:30 in the morning, sometimes earlier. Today I slept in, so it was 7. I go to sleep at 11. It's like, you know, life is not about it's not about resting or having margaritas all day long. So basically, what helped me to figure it out is to reflect on the opposite, and this is something that it's kind of big for me in my practice, reflection. So what's the opposite? Like, if I have to let go, what are the benefits of holding anger, disappointment, all this negative emotion, and also reflect on the time that I want to live my life? I can wake up in the morning, you know, at 5 in the morning with my daughter and just kind of bitch about how tired I am right now. And it's basically being in the past all the time. I want to be present as much as I want. I think this is what the yoga practice is. Like, how can you be present with what you're experiencing right now? Even if it's a negative thing, like, we have to feel it. We have to go through it.
So Matan, let me recap that and tell me if I'm right or wrong here.
Yeah.
You've always got a choice. You can reflect on the opposite. You can sleep in till 11, have a margarita, wake up on the beach, or you could come into the present moment, you know, wake up with your daughter, enjoy life a little bit more.
Yeah.
Cool. So just as we have quotes to live our lives by and inspire us, there's moments of failure as well. These may seem like opposites, but they're really complements. Where have you failed in your life?
I would love to talk with you more about it. After, I'm going to answer your question. Okay, so I will tell you. When I moved here, I had to stay here. I need to get a visa, so I went to school. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I really had no idea. After serving in the army and traveling for a few years, I went to school. I went to New York. Everybody said, like, you know, go to Wall Street. You can make a lot of money, have this lifestyle. So I studied, and I loved study. I really loved studying it in college, and I got excited about it. So I did it, and then I got a job on Wall Street. And after I did it, it's like I was telling to myself, like, this is nonsense. It's like, I don't want to wake up in the morning and read three newspapers and watch so much TV at night and be part of this race about nothing. It's just kind of like just pure ego. But I was into it, and I put, I don't know, 4 or 5 years of college, all this money that I put into it, all this time that I put into the job, but I was miserable. I was really miserable. I was, you know, at one point I was crossing the road and, you know, hoping for a car to hit me and get some money from it. It was really bad for me at that time. And I didn't want to, it was really hard for me to let go because of all the effort that I put into it. It was really, and I didn't think that everybody, that people who close to me will react badly. I was sure that people will be happy for me, but I was really afraid for my reaction because it was, I was like late 20s, and it was like admitting that I have no clue what I want to do with my life. No idea how I'm gonna continue from there, if I'm gonna live it. I was, you know, like trying to hope for something to happen, but nothing happened. So luckily, you know, I had a big motivation right there. My wife was pregnant, and she had a full-time job, so I decided that I would stay at home with my daughter, with my older one. And I did it. And it was really hard for me because, you know, I was okay with kids, but I've never really got what kids are like, you know, how hard and rewarding it is at the same time. This is something that no one tells you how hard it is. So I took it, and it, you know, it was the hardest thing I've done. It was amazing, and there was all this background question, like, what's going to happen when she's going to get older and she will have to go to daycare full time or not full time, or at one point she will have to go to school, and how will have to find something to do with my life. So that was scary, the idea of what I really want to do with my life. So, yeah.
So, Matan, how did you begin again? You clearly live this great life now, but, you know, end of 20s working on Wall Street, I'm guessing 12-hour days. Does that sound right?
Yes, around that time. Yeah. Everything together.
How did you begin again? I mean, I cannot even imagine the stress of having a pregnant wife, a job you hate, not getting very much sleep, and, you know, where do you start over when the life is stacked against you like that?
That's it. You think that's the reality, the way you describe it, but it's not like this. And you have to step back. Like, and this is what I did. I had more time. I had a few months before my daughter was born, so I started spending more time. I had more time to. I practiced yoga all this time, but I had more time to be on the mat, so I kind of like every day, and I spend around 2 hours on the mat and off the mat sitting and working on project that I liked. And it's like experiencing right now, like people who are in this jobs that they hate, their ego is or incorporate, and kind of like people hate being there. Everybody's saying like how bad it will be to leave that place. Okay, it's like people are addicted to their suffering, and I was addicted to my suffering then. Like I thought, like, if I won't be able to make whatever money or to find something that a job that fulfills me, I cannot be happy. And it's something that I think that we experience all the time. Also teaching yoga, it's like, it's a great, I really enjoy doing it. It's really challenging at the same time. And when I encounter this question, I'm saying like, I'm willing not to work as a yoga teacher. Like, I'm not attached to it. I enjoy it, but I'm not attached to it, which is a hard thing to do. So for me, it was to go back, to just drop everything back, like to allow myself time to experience what I really want to do, and taking time off from this question. So I took time off. I spent more time on the mat, and I spent a lot of time with my daughter. Here and there, I started teaching friends yoga. And then my wife told me, like, you know, why won't you enjoy it? Why won't you do it? So I registered for 200 hours just to get a certificate that I will be able to teach. And then I started teaching, and I loved it. So now kind of I'm working that I will be able to, I work that I will be able to do it for more time, really to grow it as a business as well.
Cool. You mentioned something that I find interesting as a takeaway, going back to the time, whether that's time on the mat, time with the family, time on the cushion, whatever that is, that's how you break that addiction to suffering, is just going back to the quality time. So we know some of your stresses. We know things were tough for you. But now we want to know about the happy moments, the smiles. Take us to your proudest moment in teaching yoga.
Proudest moment in teaching yoga. I think like the everyday is the proudest moment. I think just being present, like there are aha moments once in a while. At the beginning, it's like you get warm and fuzzy about them. So for me, the aha moment is the present moment. You just, my ability to be more present when I'm with you right now, like my mind, I still have the background. I can check my email. I can do all these things at the same time. But just being with people at the same time, like just being present, having a mind that works for me, like from turning, from being a negative person to be able to, that my mind is generating positive thoughts all the time. And I'm just like a happy camper here. If you want to hear stories, so I have one student which I love and he's a great friend. He's, you know, he has this warrior mentality, like, you know, for years he fights everything. And you should have seen him on the mat like a year ago. He was like, I came up with a mudra on him. Like, you know, I used to go with him with my fingers like a gun. And I used to tell him, like, you know, take a gun and just shoot yourself in the leg. It's like you're so aggressive against your body. Like, you know, you need to calm down. Otherwise, you're going to injure yourself on the mat. And so I laugh with him about it. So he came to me a few months ago and he said, like, I understood that it's like, I don't need to, it's like all my life I've been a warrior in one sense, a warrior that I want to fight everything. Everything is a fight. The family is a fight. The parents are a fight. My wife is everything I have to do with her. It's like I come and I tense. And now like, that's it. I'm giving up. I'm going to turn into a peaceful warrior to be loving. Like that's how I'm going to be bad these days. So. This is a proud moment. And yeah, another story is like I work with this child who has ADHD, and you know, just see the transformation after the first session I did with him. Like the following day, the teacher told the mom that was his best day in school. So these are just examples that. These days, what they really make me feel is like they make me trust the practice more. And this is something which is important for me. We always talk about surrendering, but trust is part of it.
So Matan, you mentioned something interesting there. You do more than just teach yoga. It sounds like you bring a therapeutic approach to your teachings.
Yoga is a therapy. If you have, it's like I always tell people, like, you know, it's like we have a bad connotation for a therapy that something is wrong with us. And yeah, it's like with me, there are many things that's wrong. I'm arrogant sometimes. I get angry. I get disappointed. I get frustrated. It's it's a really fine line, this question, because between like fixing ourselves or transforming ourselves into something, like immersing ourselves into this practice. So yeah, it's like it's a transformation. It's a form of a therapy, I think, this practice, that we heal ourselves. Like the essence of our practice, in a way, is healing, is transformation, is forgiveness. There are many things that we're doing on the mat. At the beginning, we might not understand it. It's like there is this honeymoon period in the practice that I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm stretching and I feel just great from stretching. And it's like an ecstasy experience that you don't know how to make the connection. It's magic.
Well, you go through those first like 3 months and everything is just amazing. And then all of a sudden all of your personal work comes up and people go through that yoga divorce, I think.
Yeah.
But that's then they come back.
I said the honeymoon period. So
yeah, exactly.
Whenever people come to me and say, like, I have all these bad feelings on the mat and blah, 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 I'm like, all right, the honeymoon period is over. Now it really starts. You got yourself 3 months or 9 months of honeymoon, and now you have to really start working on yourself. You can't run away. You got a proof, because I remember it. You come and telling me how amazing life is and how great it feels.
Love that. Maybe we should start calling ourselves marriage counselors. The marriage of life. So in this practice of life, we know that fear is at every corner and it's thrown at us all the time. Companies want us to buy stuff. People want to manipulate us. We live in this world of scarcity, but in reality, there's abundance everywhere. But you have to take a risk to see that abundance. You have to come back to that quality time. We want to know, what's the biggest risk you took to start sharing your practice?
Okay, so biggest risk. There are many of them. Like, you know, I think as a teenager, like to ask a girl out for a date is a risk. if she's gonna say no, like this is very primal. It might sound funny and stupid for some people, but you know, it's like if you reflect back to being a teenager, this is something we're experiencing. I was in a kind of in a path to have a career in the Navy. So I grew up with not in a rich family, so that was kind of a security for me, like having a career in the Army, finishing when I'm 40, and be able to do whatever I want then. So leaving that was a risk. Leaving the corporate world was a risk. Leaving Israel and give a chance to the relationship with my wife was a risk. And yeah, we always have this risk, I think, of being vulnerable and being uncomfortable with the situation. So. And so the internal thing is basically overcoming our fears and our doubts in ourselves. That's the big thing.
So speaking of fears and doubts, they make you do funny things on a daily basis, even if you do your best to compensate. No matter how hard we sit on the cushion or how much we surrender on the mat, we all have our demons. So Matan, what do your demons make you do every day?
What are they making me do? I guess they're making me to judge myself more and to have more doubts. Like these are the demons. And I guess the work will be to feel them, to stay with them, to allow them to be, not to push them away, not to be aggressive towards them, not to be afraid of them. And at the same time, you go and you go and you act the way you want to act in this world. So, like example, I was a little bit nervous. I've never done this before. I was never on an interview before. So I was a little bit nervous in the morning, and we're organizing the house, the girls, all of that. And, you know, I felt, and I said, like, you know, I told my wife, like, I feel a bit nervous. Let's do, you know, let's do this morning fun, even though like I want to stay at bed and say like, you know, you're gonna be with the girls and organize everything. So like, no, we're gonna turn it into a party. We're gonna put some music. We're gonna dance. So the fears that were still there, but they don't take control over our behavior so much.
Okay. The other thing we want to know, and I guess we're dying to know, is kind of about hardship. You know, our demons make us do goofy things. We have to take these risks in life, but sometimes you have to sacrifice along the way as well. Teaching yoga, especially if you're just getting started, is not exactly the path to riches.
Yeah.
What kind of hardships have you faced on your path in sharing your practice?
I guess it's judgment. Like, you know, people think that everybody is happy in yoga classes, but if you look at it from the teacher's perspective, like many people suffer on their mat. So watching it is not easy not to reflect it on yourself or not to judge yourself, because everything we see in others, we judge ourselves accordingly. So like trusting, I guess it is the hard part, and believing that you do something and you're going to get things in return. So it might not be, might be money, like vacation and stuff, but everything is, you know, we get in one way or another. If I need, like, you know, I'm just thinking about a little toy that I want for my girls for the garden, I will just drive by and I'll find it on the side road. Somebody wants to give it away, and you know, I got like a 1700 low ride on lawnmower, and all these little things that, you know, it's this feeling that you've been taken care of when you turn your life into a service. Like you get everything you want from you desire, which is important for you from this life.
I think that's the takeaway right there. Turn your life into a service, trust the process, and embrace your demons.
Yeah. It's like, I really think that if you stay in the practice without discovering the service, then it's called the karma yoga, and without the bhakti, we can call it devotion, but it's more, it's not just devotion for external thing. I find it more like internal devotion to life, that life experience within ourselves. That's the beauty of the practice. So the practice never stops. Mm-hmm. Like every time of every second of our day can be a practice. And I'm saying can, it's not like from a point of guilt, but from a point of intention. Like I want to participate more in every second of my life. I want to wake up in the morning and you know, it's okay that I feel tired for a few minutes. I'm stay with being tired, like no problem. And I'm going to start participating, like playing, singing in the morning, doing whatever I want to do in every, and also with the sad parts, like experience them. And it's part of life.
The practice never stops. I'm writing that down right now. So Matan, nobody achieves success in life all by themselves. Life is this big team effort. We all have mentors that we look up to. We want to know, which one person has taught you the most in your life?
Oh, I was lucky. It's like I was rebelling against what I'm doing for many years, but this is like me jumping to the family business. Like my mom, my dad, my grandma, they're all spiritual teachers. My aunt, it's like the family business. So I was really lucky to have this, and I'm surrounded, like my mother-in-law, my wife, she's my best friend. It's like I learned so much from her. I learned so much from my daughters. So there is this concept of guru yoga in yoga. And I think that if you really want to learn, we have to turn our world to be our teacher. Okay. So I'm with you right now, like you're my teacher. So if I, you know, if I don't like the way, you know, you put your headphones or the way you wear your shirt or all of this, it's something that I can learn about myself, about the way I judge myself. So and in terms of yoga, I studied with amazing teachers. Like I started practicing in India about 12 years ago. I had amazing teachers there, and then I moved here, and I had great teachers as well. And one of the teachers that, even though we teach completely different styles of yoga these days, he's my teacher because his name is Keshava Das, and he told me about the attitude to the practice, not attitude in a bad way, but how do you approach, like how do you live yoga, not how you do warrior one, warrior two concentration. That's, you know, this is just technique, but how do you really transform yourself off the mat, like what yoga is suggesting us to do in our life. So I think this is something really rare to find a teacher like that, and he should be really gifted, that teacher, and also to be able to teach you, because it's something that this is the part of self-study, and this is something that it's really, really hard to teach. And I'm happy that I was open to it at that time. So he helped me a lot.
Okay, that's great. Let's talk
for him. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more about your yoga bloodlines here.
Yeah.
Who else has taught you your practice?
I worked with Sharat Arora, with Usha Devi. I practiced a little bit Jiva Mukti. I practiced with Dharma Mitra. I did my 200 hours with him. So I worked with Srivasta Ramaswamy, the Krishnamacharya student. Did some Ashtanga. Meditation. I work with in New York with a Vedanta teacher, but most of the time for me it's self practice. Like 99% of the time is me coming to the mat. I can get an inspiration somewhere. I can take a class and get inspired by something, but I usually take it to my mat and explore it. I chew it for a while.
Let's say somebody walks into your class tomorrow. They're a brand new student, never even heard of yoga, and maybe their girlfriend or boyfriend, whoever, dragged them in there and said, you've got to go to this. You're going to lose your mind if you don't try this.
Yeah.
What would you tell that person as a beginner, someone with no knowledge of yoga? What's one bit of advice you'd share with them?
Come more. Like you have to come more, you have to experience, you have to try all these. There are so many kinds of yogas, there are so many kinds of teachers. You have to come more, you have to communicate with yourself, you have to reflect, you have to talk to the teacher. Like talk to the teacher, ask the teacher what it is about. And there are so many other ways to practice yoga except what we called Hatha Yoga or practicing asana. There are many ways to do it. And I think with yoga, there is a learning curve. Like my teacher, Usha Devi, she told me, for the first 7 years, you will be a beginner. And I didn't get it. Like I was only practicing then for a year and a half or a year. And so obviously I didn't want to get it. And now that I practice a little bit longer, I still see myself as a beginner. It's like I don't know how you can become advanced in your yoga practice by being able to do what, to stand on one arm. It's like that's not a beginner. Just the body can do something. So, it's like this is something that you get with time, like being more humble about your practice, like, and you know, in society, especially here, it's like you have the classes like beginners, intermediate, advanced. that all they're talking about is basically the body, what the body can do, not what the mind can do. And there are many people that cannot fit to the contemporary yoga classes, to some of them, but they have the mental ability to sit on a chair and meditate. So kind of I think they're more advanced. They don't need, it's like many people, they need this strong asana in order to get out of their mind into their body. And there are people that we miss them because they don't need this stuff. They can sit and meditate. That might be their practice. But with the label of yoga is like all this, you know, girls on a yoga journal, like all these skinny girls in their 20s. And this is the image that we're creating for yoga, which is not true.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because you can be paralyzed, you can be 99, you can be 2, you can be whoever you are. You don't even need the body. You can just sit there and meditate, and that's yoga.
Yeah.
All right. We've gotten to know you a little bit more. We've heard some of your stories. We know about your team, but now we want to get to know your dirty secrets in life. Specifically, what's your unfair advantage in this world?
I have beautiful eyes. Yeah. I have long eyelashes. Everybody's jealous of my daughters for that.
What would you tell the 20-year-old version of yourself?
Have more fun. Don't speculate so much what will be when you're, you know, when you'll be older. Listen to your heart. Take your time. Do more fun stuff. You can always have a career and do all this adult stuff.
Now, when you were 20, you were in the army. Is that right?
Yeah, I finished when I was 21.
Oh, no way. So just to get a little bit of perspective, when you join the Israeli military, that really is a career. You can do that and retire, you said, like when you're 40?
Back then it was 40, then 45. But most people don't do it. My brother now is in the army, kind of in a career. But I hope for him that he's going to leave it soon and have more fun with his life. Yeah.
I find that interesting because, you know, here in the States, it's all volunteer and, you know, some do it as a career, but for the most part, you go in for a year or two or three or four, I think minimum's four now. You get out and then your life is usually a mess. There's so many documentaries about that. So I find it interesting that you can join the military as a career and it's a point of honor, whereas our soldiers coming home, it's kind of not a pretty situation sometimes.
No, it's not a career. Everybody has to do it for 3 years, but if you want, you can stay for longer and turn it.
Oh, okay.
In the career, if the army wants you. And it's something that is completely different. In Israel, everybody's going to the army. Here, it's not everybody going to the army. It's like we all know who is going to the army and for which reasons. they try to get an advantage, like people that come from a lot of it is are people that coming from low-income population, and that's their way to get education and do better in life. And it's a little bit sad.
Yeah, I agree. All right. What are you working on right now that has you charged up every single morning?
Family. Myself. Yeah. That's mostly it. Like, that's my creation. Like, having a family right now. So I do work, like, but I try to spend more time with my girls. I have a 1.5 and a 4.5 and a little dog. And so that's in terms of where my energy, in terms of like more yoga, I try to shift from teaching less group classes to teach a little bit more retreats and workshops. I have more time to travel right now. And I try to shift from teaching at the studio to outside the studio. So at the studios, I work at different studios and I have the, what I call the studio yogis, and I work more with, try to work more with non-studio yogis. So to do more mindfulness workshop outside in companies and people's houses and offices, I teach yoga for people with arthritis, for kids with ADHD, kind of taking yoga outside the studio more. Because I work with in a high school. I teach. I'm gonna do a teacher training for elementary school teachers. So I think at the same time, like when you look about the demographic that practices yoga, it's basically a sport for rich. Like no one, where I live, it's like anywhere between $18 to $22 per class. It's not everybody can afford it, but I think the world will be better if more people will practice mindfulness for 12, 20 minutes a day than take 2 yoga classes a week.
I think that brings up a really good point. I mean, it's almost like a tax. If you, you know, don't make very much money, $20 a class is insane. It's like another tax on your life, even though it's something you could desperately need.
Yeah.
All right, Matan. So this next section is a rapid-fire question and answer session. I like to call it Thunder Road.
It's, okay.
I get the inspiration from the Bruce Springsteen song. So let's go down Thunder Road together and kickstart Immersion Nation's journey on the life well lived. Just like the boss, we're pulling out of here to win. Matan, are you ready?
Yeah.
What holds you back from reaching your goals?
Letting go of fears.
Do you have a favorite internet resource, like a Yoga Glow or even just email, that you can share with us?
I use Yoga Glow once in a while, but no, not really.
How about anything else? Any other tools you use online?
No, I have an email, a website, but I try not to spend so much time online.
Do you get a lot of students via your website?
Some, not many.
Okay. What one daily habit has helped propel you to success?
One daily habit. Choosing love.
What one food do you crave all the time?
Not all the time, but I do crave dark chocolate.
What do you have to say no to in order to thrive?
Gluten and fried food.
Do you have a weakness for any special fried foods?
I love fries once in a while. Chips.
1 second here. My printer didn't print out my questions the way I wanted. So we're all much more intimate with ambivalence and discouragement. How do you stay true to your connections, your convictions, your family, every single day?
I try to not to think about the present moment. I'm in the present, but kind of like I'm not focusing on the present moment right now so much as my intention, like to live right now. So I deserve to have this fried food, or I deserve to have these sweets right now. I deserve to drink, to smoke, to do all these crazy things that we want to live. We're saying to ourselves, like, this is living life to the end or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about the next moment, like what's more important for me? Like how I want to behave with my daughters, how I want to wake up the next morning. How is it going to change me as a human being? Because this is basically all mind imprints that we're creating. Like right now, you know, I can get home tired and start eating chocolate at night, and I know that it's not good for me. Or I can get home tired and just a little bit angry from being tired, and I'm saying, like, all right, I'm going to stay with it. And within an hour, I assume that I will give it a chance. I will see how I'm going to feel. And usually within an hour, I forget about it. So forget about the initial craving that I have.
In one sentence, who are you?
Great question. I have no answer, but I'm enjoying who I am.
But now we've got to kick it up a notch. In three words, who are you?
A human being.
One word. Who are you?
Matan.
Hey, good answer. I like that one.
Yeah.
So just as a reminder to anybody listening out there, all these resources, all these links, all the names we've mentioned are going to be on the show notes page. Just head on over to findyourimmersion.com and search for Matan. All right, Matan. So let's think forward a little bit here. Let's get out of the moment, even if it's just for a moment.
Yeah.
What are you creating for yourself in 10 years?
All right. I want to expand my work a little bit more. And we think, like, yoga is super popular right now. And mindfulness, like, this is the big thing. But there are so many things that we don't know about it, okay? It's in terms of research, what works for some people, what don't work for others people. So I really want to know much more about it. In terms of asana and in terms of meditation, I'll give you an example. What's the difference doing a forward fold with engaging your thighs and not engaging your thighs? Not on the body, on the mind. Okay, for example, this is some research that I am trying to focus on and ask a lot of people about it. And I'm hopefully going to start a little project with a scientist soon about it. So I think that we're, as society, we're really young in that. And what works and what not, and what's not working in yoga. It's like we take it for granted, but it's growing. It's been changed by society, and I'm fascinated about it. There are so many great people that do amazing work in terms of, understanding the body and healing the body. So my vision is to be able to progress it, to help us as society to progress all this amazing science of yoga with the certain populations that I work with. So we can just be better humans, better parents, better friends.
I love that you said that. Better humans, better parents, better friends. It all starts with moving things forward. Now, Matan, where can we find all this work you're going to be doing? Do you have a title for the project yet?
I need to get a domain, but my wife and I are thinking about Moving Minds, a name for it, because there is movement and there is mind. It's like, they're all the same. Like, movement and mindfulness are, I think that movement is the I heard it something that this is the initial form of therapy, and yoga is movement, and meditation is, in a way, it's a movement as well. Like, we're moving our minds forward. So I don't have a title for it yet, but this is where I'm going with it, and it's something that it's, as you said, it's really, I wake up and I'm really fascinated to go and to work with all these people that I see during the week. I spend a lot of time teaching. I teach around 15 to 20 classes a week.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah. It's like, I just spoke with my friend, he is a great teacher, Charles Matkins, and there are teachers that teach one or two classes a week, but it's like the book Outliers. It's like you need, in order to master something, you need to have at least 10,000 hours in it, and I want to have more hours seeing bodies moving, seeing people practicing. So I work hard. I work really hard to teaching and seeing people and absorb all this energy. And I do feel that by being in that energy all the time, we get this psychic powers just to see people. Like, I can see people and I can understand pretty well what's happening in their body right now. And I can also understand by seeing the body, I can understand, you know, according to all these yoga models, like, what's what is off balance with them mentally, emotionally. It's like we know it. Like everybody knows it, but spending more time gives you, like, you enter a room and you see people with, you know, hunching over, holding their arms in certain way. It tells us something about their mood. So, yeah, that's what I'm excited about these days.
So everybody stay tuned to Matan's work. I know personally, I can't wait to see the results of all that.
I can't wait to see where it will take me. I'm waiting for the path to unfold.
So Matan, you mentioned Outliers and some other books out there. We're all big readers. We're big consumptions of media. We want to know, what book have you read that you can recommend to us?
Which one that I really like? The Path of the Spiritual Warrior.
Mm.
Amazing. There are people, I love writing. I kind of like, that's something that I want to work on more. I used to have a blog. Now I took it down. I was too busy with family. Not too busy, but good busy with family.
Sure.
The way he writes is just brilliant. And the way he expresses ideas and how humble he is in his writing, it's just like, I wish I could have been so humble and gentle as he is. So,
The Path of the Spiritual Warrior. Check it out. And as a little bonus, if you want a free audiobook, head on over to fyiaudiobook.com. Search for The Path of the Spiritual Warrior, and Audible will give you one free audiobook if you try out their service. All right, Matan, I've got a question for you from my previous guest.
Yeah.
Now, bear in mind, they had no idea who would be answering this. On your mat, you can't hide anything, but we all do something. All those fears we have come up. What do you hide on your mat that you have to force yourself to unhide every day?
I guess acknowledge my competitiveness nature.
I like that. Acknowledge your competitive nature.
Yeah.
Let's wrap it up here and pull it down into one takeaway. Our listeners are trying to make their lives a little bit better. The Find Your Immersion listener hasn't figured out their success formula yet. What's one takeaway that our audience can use in the next 24 hours to make their lives just a little bit better?
I think if they take 15 to 20 minutes and write down what is really important for them, okay? Because most of the time we're running after the word for it in Sanskrit is stuff, basically. Running after stuff that is just not important for us at all. So that's kind of the practice of renunciation, what's called in Buddhism, like what's really important for you. And then you see that the time that you spend on others is just not as important as we think. And then to write a gratitude meditation, what you're gratitude for. If you hold anger against others, write a forgiveness meditation, and you do it every day. Gratitude, forgiveness, and what's important for you. And this is what, you know, this is where your mind will turn. It's going to take you 30 days, 90 days, but you will see a difference that just spending the 5 minutes a day or 4 minutes a day or 3 minutes a day, just reminding yourself why you're here for, what's important for you will, I think that's the best thing in our practice, that it helps us clear the path, like what are we here for to do?
Absolutely. Gratitude, forgiveness, and what was the third one?
Gratitude, forgiveness, and renunciation. Like what's important, right?
What's important?
Okay, yeah.
Perfect. Gratitude, forgiveness, and what's important to you. Write them down and meditate on them. Perfect. All right, Matan, who do you both know and admire that I should interview on this show?
Keshava Das. You need to bring him over.
So much as we talk about gratitude and doing what's important in forgiveness, this is just straight up peer pressure right here. Matan, you've been a great guest. How can Immersion Nation reach out to you and get to know you a little bit more and ask you some questions?
They can email me, matan@yogawithmatan. Go to my website, yogawithmatan.com, and find my email. I like to spend time answering, connecting with people. I'm very open. I can talk. I can do everything. I can do everything that I can do in order to, you know, to spread whatever helped me on the journey. I will be really happy to share. And if I have no idea, I will tell you, I have no idea. You have to ask somebody else.
An honest man. So, once again, it's matan@yogawithmatan.com. And just let's double check the spelling. It's M as in Mary, A as in Apple, T as in Tom, A as in Apple, N as in Nancy, Matan. And yogawithmatan.com. Matan, we can't thank you enough. We bow to your humility and we thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Patrick. You had such, you know, I really appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for listening to this 10th episode of Find Your Immersion. Stay tuned next Tuesday for the next episode.